thank you everybody for joining. You know, again, it's MassDEP's intention to do this call every week until you decide that, you know, until we decide that it's not beneficial. But certainly in these early weeks, I think right now there's a lot to talk about and a lot of information to share and a lot of questions and answers that I think we can be working on. Jen, let me just ask, is it the same protocol? I know we're getting used to doing conference calls with hundreds of people. You know, I really want to give Mass Waterworks credit for getting us up and going these first 2 weeks. We're trying to master this Zoom technology ourselves. Is it still because of, you know, with this many people, you're still encouraging folks, if they have questions, to send it to you as an email during this time that we're on?
I think that would be great. Yeah, I think if people could email any questions they have during the call to jpeterson@masswaterworks.org. And then when the commissioner's done, I can go through the list of questions. And then if people are unable to send an email, then maybe we'll allow people to unmute themselves after, if that works.
Sure. And it's jpeterson@masswaterworks.org. And that's Peterson with a D, not that everybody doesn't already know you. So good. Well, thank you very much again for the opportunity. And once again, I want to start by, you know, saying thank you to the water systems that are, you know, not only providing water now, but thinking ahead on how to plan for a really unprecedented event. We at DEP share your goal of making sure you're providing safe water. We want to be supportive. We want to make sure that we're working together in this challenging time. And in that spirit, you know, I'm going to, you know, start with a few things, you know, talk a little bit about some of the questions we had last time, and then get to some of the questions that have come in this time. Later this afternoon, and I'll mention this again, you know, later in my remarks, but later this afternoon, we're going to update our question and answer guidance document and our contact list. That's going to go on the mass.gov COVID-19 website. And we're also going to try to set up a link on our website for it so that if people are looking for this information, they can find it. That should be going live this afternoon. And then, of course, you know, we're going to get other questions today that we will update that for next week, you know, as rapidly as possible so that we're continuing to build on the information that's hopefully useful for people. You know, even if it's not an issue for you right now, maybe somebody raised it and it might be an issue that will be helpful. An answer to a particular question might be helpful to folks later on. And so we're going to try to put as much on the website as possible. Again, we have representatives of each of the regional offices on the line to listen to, you know, this, you know, if we're dealing with a site-specific case, there's actually one or two in the questions that came in that I'm going to address, I think, one for the Western region and one for the Southeast region. So, you know, we're going to be prepared to, you know, go through those for answering the question and following up on. But in the meantime, since we were last on the phone together, a couple of things. As you might have seen yesterday, the governor declared, further refined his emergency order to require people working in non-essential businesses to stay home for right now, through April 6th or 7th, I believe. The order came with an attachment that included a definition of what is considered an essential business, and not surprisingly, water and wastewater operations and things that support it are considered essential. And so, you know, we tried, you know, in our work with the governor's office and in terms of trying to make sure it was clear, we tried to make it clear, and it's in a couple of places. If you look, it's attachment A to the order. There are things that specifically talk about water and wastewater operators, both public and private entities that help run water and wastewater systems and also that support systems. There's language also in the sections that talk about Department of Public Works employees that do things like maintain water and wastewater systems. So I believe, you know, it certainly covers your industry and the type of work you do, recognizing that it is, in fact, essential. We did get a couple of questions from some labs that do analytical work for water systems. And we tried to be clear and in writing indicating that we believe that, you know, based on the way that essential services list is written, those labs are also considered essential service because they are helping to support the public function, health function that you're all engaged in right now. So, you know, if people have questions, you know, definitional questions, we can certainly pursue that. But you know, again, we've tried to be clear and we will continue to try to make sure that people know where they fit in there. But hopefully that bit of clarity is helpful. I'd also note that today the governor filed a municipal relief bill. It deals with a lot of municipal functions. It was filed in the legislature today. You know, some of the things are more in terms of the permitting side and the, you know, the budgeting side, you know, in terms of recognizing that there's been a big disruption and local governments need time to be able to process this stuff. I will also notice we've gotten questions on both the water and the wastewater side. The bill also does include lifting the cap for, you know, retirees who may come back, may come back to work for a municipality, or you know, sometimes that cap, you know, can be an issue if you're trying to get somebody for a longer period of time. And so, as I understand it, the governor's bill also includes suspending that cap, so that if you know, part of the solution of a municipality is to bring back a retiree to help fill in some functions, that option is available. Thirdly, as I noted, you know, we are going to publish our questions and answers today, you know, based on what we heard from the last time. It will not only include some of the questions that we heard and how we propose to answer, and I'm going to go over some of the bigger ticket items right now. It also includes the emergency contact information for each region and for headquarters, just to make sure that we are being as transparent as possible and you know how to reach us. You know, in terms of the bigger picture items, you know, again, we tried to answer, you know, we tried to have some information about sampling first, you know, two things, sort of the logistics and then sort of the regulatory response. If you're not able to get into sampling sites, you know, how we can work together to have you meet your obligations, you know, and the federal requirements and the, you know, the good practices of making sure we know what's going on in our water system while still recognizing that sites may be closed as a result of the response to the COVID-19 thing. In terms of the logistics and personal protection, you know, the first thing I would say is in our questions and answers, we've asked about what is the best available guidance in terms of, you know, precautions that an employee would take, or, you know, if an employee is interacting with a member of the public in a sampling type of situation. We've consulted with the Department of Public Health. They really recommend following an OSHA document, which we're going to have the link up to. They say that's probably the most definitive word right now, as well as information that they've provided on their own website on the COVID-19 Commonwealth of Massachusetts website. So we're going to have links to both of that there. I will note that I have started to see, I saw one, you know, Connecticut utility, you know, started to think about, you know, specifically if you're dealing with, you know, a public water operator going, you know, going into places, what sorts of safeguards we can work with Jen Peterson to make that available as well. You know, that's the first we've seen of a specific one done by a water utility. And if it's useful, we'll share it and see if that generates discussion about additional protective measures. We were asked if there is a particular program to help water systems get personal protective equipment. We don't have one right now. We have made the emergency response authorities aware of the fact, and they're certainly aware of the fact that water and wastewater operators are operating critical infrastructure and are providing an essential service. But as you may have been seeing in the media reports, there is such a demand, simply to get that equipment to medical providers that, the ability to design something for, other essential parts is something that we don't, that we don't have today. But again, we have engaged with a number of authorities and continue to highlight the fact that this is an important consideration. One suggestion made was that if you are working in a community and you are in contact with your own emergency management agency, that may be another avenue to underscore the importance of getting that equipment if you need help for that. Again, we've been encouraging on a number of these questions with regards to sampling. When it comes to bacteria sampling, we've been trying to encourage early contact with DEP to see if we can find alternative locations or other approaches. We've talked about upstream, downstream. We've talked about alternative locations. We've even talked about the outdoor spigots as a last resort. We've been talking to EPA about that as well. So we'll continue to, also the number of sites and whether you can do repeat sites. So again, I would encourage you if you're confronting a problem like this, to engage with our folks. We also talked about, the possibility of being flexible on the timing of doing lead and copper sampling, recognizing that there's a bigger window. So we're going to continue to try to work with you all on that. We were asked if DEP staff will be performing on-site inspections. As of right now, we've curtailed our own inspections, in response to the orders that were issued. On the other hand, we do recognize that some of you may have facilities that you need to have come online or other things going on where an inspection will be necessary or advisable. So if that's the case, stay in touch with us so that we're not holding up your work. We are starting to think about now how we can help in those types of cases. Our Q's and A's will also talk about areas where you may be able to submit things electronically rather than by mail or by hand. We'll try to have some materials available on that. We also are encouraging you to let us know if there are issues with chemical supplies. We've been trying to encourage each other. We've been trying to encourage staying in touch on that. And so we would continue to ask you if you're starting to see a situation where you think you might be running low on something, or you're concerned that there's going to be a disruption in the system, let us know. We did also provide more clarity in terms of if it's fluoride is one of the things that you're dealing with, what is it that, our notification piece is relatively straightforward, but we do have some guidance on what's needed to notify DPH who's on that particular issue. The last is staffing. Again, I've been very impressed from hearing from all of you about, the types of work you're doing to make sure that you're able to maintain a staff on site throughout the course of this emergency event. Some of the arrangements you're making that may get into a discussion about, you want to make sure that what you're doing to be prudent during this event also, there's an awareness on our part so that you're not, having to worry about compliance with otherwise required staffing levels. There's been talk about, you know, can we do more with SCADA systems? There's been talk about who can you possibly use in an emergency if staff is unavailable, and you know, who can you bring in an emergency temporary basis that would know how to run the system. And so we've been doing a lot of work. I think Mike Maynard is on this call. He's the chairman of the Board of Licensure. He's been working with his colleagues at DPL. Again, if you're thinking about using people that might need an emergency certification, he's trying to make sure that that process is as streamlined and as effective as possible. There will be Q's and A's that get published today that include that. Mike, is there anything you want to add to the staffing and licensure issue right now? If so, you'd have to unmute yourself, but I'll give you this opportunity.
Yeah, hi, Marty, and everyone. First of all, I'd like to thank everyone for the work that they're doing out there. I'm really proud of the industry, and also all my coworkers that are that are working around the clock to make good things happen in a difficult situation. Marty, do you want me to run down the issues of the licenses, or do you want to handle that later on?
I just think, you know, if you want to hit the high points of what you'd like, you know, if people are dealing with this, either it's questions you're hearing a lot about lately or things that you'd like people to remember when they're thinking about emergency authorization, why don't you hit some of those?
Okay, I'll hit some of the highlights. DPL is a licensing authority, as most people know. So currently, the temporary emergency cert is on their website. So if you identify an individual who needs that you want to be as a backup operator or as a primary operator, go to the DPL website, download the application, complete it, send it in hard copy, and then also send it to Drinking Water Board at mass.gov with a CC to me. We're logging those, we're batching them, and we're going to process them as quick as possible. The next thing is that through this, we found that there are a number of licenses that have recently expired, in like 12/31/19. Now, what DPL is doing to address that, this is a separate issue, is they are sending out a letter to all of those individuals whose licenses have expired. And that is, it's the letter with the authorization code. You can get it, go online, renew your license. DPL is working to waive the late fee. Hopefully that won't become an issue. So in the event that you cannot, so that's the expired licenses. DEP has created a list of operators whose licenses have recently expired, and that will be on the DEP website. It'll be posted in the FAQs where you can get it. So if you're a system or an individual, you want to see if your license is recently expired, we'll have the list of all of those on the DEP website. And for the final thing is that if for some reason the operator's license has expired recently, or they can't get on to renew it, just submit the temporary emergency certification application and identify the individual, and it will be processed. If DPL needs any additional information, they will call you. I am working closely with them to make sure that we act on these as quickly as possible. And that's about it.
Very good. Thanks, Mike. And obviously we'll have opportunities for questions there as well during this. So now I want to, our questions and answers are going to go up today. Now I wanted to get to the things that have come in over the past few hours that Jen Peterson was good enough to forward to us. The first one is DEP inspections, sanitary surveys. Will they be delayed? As as I noted, you know, DEP has been cutting way back to try to comply with the orders to, you know, limit contact and engage in social distancing. At some point, we will be, you know, identifying ways to get back into the business. We want to make sure that we're being thoughtful about the timing, that we're being thoughtful about the best protocols to put in place. So there will be more to come on that. Right now, we're not. And before we do, we will be reaching out to systems on how to do that. Lab issues. We got a question from somebody, and I think I highlighted this before, about labs, you know, being open or closed as part of essential services. You know, again, our view is labs are essential services. So, you know, if there are other issues associated with lab capacity, then I would encourage you to be in touch with the regional staff or headquarters staff, and we'll try to help on that. But, you know, again, if one of the issues has been that a lab says that it doesn't deem itself as an essential service, an essential, you know, provider, I think, you know, they can rest assured that we consider them being that. Staffing, we heard, you know, somebody raised concerns about statements from the Rhode Island governor about closing the borders. You know, I didn't really know a whole lot about it, but Damon Gutterman just forwarded me an article that says that, the, you know, at least as of about a half hour ago, this news report that was in the Boston Globe indicated that the governor of Rhode Island was not talking about closing the Rhode Island and Massachusetts border. So hopefully that's of some help there. The next question has to do with cross connection, and this one I think we may need to get back to you on. You know, I think it's a question that you know, we need to talk about it. In the person says they handle cross connection control for a town. It occurs that in our town, some residential fire sprinkler systems are equipped with reduced pressure zone backflow devices. The device may fail during a dirty water event or water break. The relief device could fail catastrophically. We are not allowed to stop water at a sprinkler. Not sure how to handle this. They can't stop water at a fire sprinkler without a permit from the fire department. Not sure how to handle this. I've asked the local fire department to create an SOP for this situation. So it sounds like there's a little bit of work. I don't know how big an issue this is for other communities, but I believe it's Bill Ricca that raised this, and I'd ask the Northeast region to reach out with them and see if how helpful we can be on that. There's a question about sampling, about TTHM and HAA5 on the monthly schedule. Will schedules be adjusted? You know, due to limited access or staffing. Again, we want to be thoughtful about this and work with you. So I'd encourage anybody with that question to contact, you know, their regional office. That's a question that's coming from Newburyport. So I'd encourage our Northeast region folks to reach out to Newburyport and talk about that further. Our current lead and copper, the next one is lead and copper sampling. That we're to collect 40 samples in the second quarter and 40 samples in the fourth quarter. These would be difficult to obtain under normal circumstances. Would we be eligible for restructuring regarding lead and copper sampling? Yes, I think we would like to work with you on that. That's Southampton, so I'd ask the regional office to follow up. Nantucket asked to get a call back from the Southeast Regional Office. They have a question about coliform sampling. It's going to be particularly acute in April. And if, you know, if I could ask DJ, if you wouldn't mind calling Nantucket back, that would be great. Reporting. Will we accept monthly reports and other compliance reports electronically in lieu of hard copies during this time? I think one of our Q's and A's gets to that, saying that we're trying to be as open to that as possible. I might ask either Kathy or Yvette to unmute yourselves and, you know, see if there's something you'd like to say about it. Again, it's monthly reports and compliance reports. So would either Kathy or Yvette like to take this on?
This is Yvette. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
We are working on a plan to address the ability to submit reports electronically. And as an interim step, reports can be submitted through the P Director email address, which I believe most water suppliers are familiar with. It is program.director-dwp@mass.gov. However, I would encourage you to work with your regions, and we will have information on that in the FAQ and on our website. This is an interim step, and it's something that you should be familiar with, at least the email address.
Okay, so we're working towards doing that, and hopefully more guidance. Maybe next week we can say, with a little bit of certainty, here's the ones that we're able to take electronically for, you know, at least during the pendency of this emergency time. Great, thank you. We also got a question about CCR and ASR date changes. Is there gonna be flexibility or staying the course? We're still working on that one, and I hope by next week we can have more guidance on that one as well. So I think those are the questions we received in advance of the call. I want to invite Jen. If there are other things that have come in, we'll do our best to either answer them now or take them back and have an answer for you shortly.
Great. So I have. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, hear you fine.
Okay. So I have one, I guess maybe from Michael Maynard, about waiving the fee on filing for a temporary license. Michael, is there a fee?
Don't forget to unmute yourself, Mike.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Now we can hear you.
Okay. Yeah, that's out of our control, Jen. I know DPL is looking into it, and the commissioner and Kathy and the vet have, you know, don't want any fees charged, but that's DPL's call. So we're pushing hard for that. Hopefully, DPL will make that happen.
So we'll take that back. It sounds like people are interested in, you know, getting as much fee relief as possible during this time.
Another question about the reporting and the submissions being due by the 10th of the month. Is this still going to be the case, or will there be any flexibility on submissions by the 10th and the use of electronic signatures and email submissions? So I think you said more to come on the electronic submissions, but what about the deadline of the 10th of the month?
I'll let the program supplement my answer. I mean, you know, to the degree, you know, there's two parts in it. Number one, if possible, is it good to, you know, hit the reporting dates? Yes, it is. Secondly, is there an enforcement, you know, element that if you're late? And again, you know, I'm trying to avoid the, we recognize that systems are, you know, really dealing with something unprecedented here. So while we'd like them in on as much time as possible, you know, I don't think people should be worried about, you know, getting a, you know, notice of non-compliance. Now, obviously, if it goes, you know, if you're not in touch with us and saying, you know, look, you know, we need a little more time, then that's obviously starts to raise other questions about what's going on. But you know, we're trying to be flexible here, and you know, we want people to do the best they can. But if there are situations, and if they can let us know that they're confronting those situations, that's always the best way to deal with these things. Kathy or Yvette, is there anything you'd like to add to that? And if so, you have to unmute yourself.
Kathy, you're unmuted.
No, I was not going to add any more than that. That sounded great, Commissioner.
Okay. Another question, maybe for Damon, or someone from the lab side of things. Does COVID-19, would COVID-19 come up on a bacteria sample if it were present in the water?
This is Damon. No. After we've been told by any of the people we've talked to so far, there is no direct test for COVID-19.
Okay, thanks. In terms of the essential employees, do the water operators have to carry photo IDs around with them, or their water licenses to prove they are essential?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm glad you asked that. I meant to cover that. Yeah, the way it works is it's probably good to have your ID. People have asked, well, am I going to get a letter saying that I'm an essential, industry employee? And the answer is no. That's not how this program is set up. So if you have, if you have IDs and, you're able to explain that you're working in the fields that in the field that's covered by it, I would say that's probably all you need to do. But, having some ID that identifies where you work is probably very helpful if you, in the unlikely case you ever are confronted by somebody on the roads, which seems, that would probably be the best way to deal with it.
So we have established that water and sewer are critical workers. So a question, if they are quarantined, can they get priority COVID-19 testing to get them back to work quicker?
I will find that out. I will find that out. I don't have an answer for that right now.
Just a comment, I guess, and something that we talked about in terms of the bacteria sampling. One system is reminding folks that the outdoor spigots aren't the best place to be taking the sample. So that really, as you said, Commissioner, should be a last resort from outside spigots, hydrants, that sort of thing.
Right. And that's right. It is, and we're still trying to see how, avoid it just because of the huge downsides if you get a false positive. I will say that we have engaged with EPA a couple of times on this, to see that it, and again, I think they view it also as a course of last resort, but, is there something more we can say about disinfection of the spigot? Are there things that if it really has to be used, how can it be reported to reflect the fact that this is a less reliable testing point? But, you're right. If there are other alternatives, they're probably preferable just because of the uncertainty associated with it. But, if systems are up against it, we want to, needing to, look at that, we want to make sure that we at least have the best guidance out there. But yeah, if we can avoid it, that would certainly be helpful.
Hi, Marty. This is Yvette.
Go ahead, Yvette.
We are working on guidance. We're working on it with EPA, so we should have some information to share shortly.
Right. Right. That's great. So hopefully, in the next few days when we do our next update to the Q&A, after the one that goes live today, we may have more to say on that. Thank you, Yvette.
The next question. So you are aware some water systems are staggering their operators so that they're, they reduce the chance of exposure to all of the other operators. So they're, shifting work schedules. So mm-hmm. It has become political in some situations, and some towns are questioning whether or not to do this because of union issues. And so this question is, does DEP have any guidance on this in terms of how they allocate their staff in a given day?
First of all, again, I really want to commend everybody for thinking ahead about how to make sure they're meeting their core functions going forward. We don't have specific guidance on this issue. We do want to work with systems that are making prudent arrangements to make sure, you know, whether it's thinking ahead about, you know, other people they could bring in on an emergency basis, or staggering, you know, work, you know, staffing levels. You know, we want to make sure that we're working with systems. We don't have a preferred course. What we want to do is make sure that if it's something that a community needs, or, you know, a public water system in a community needs, that we know about it and we can support it and make sure that, you know, we're all comfortable that it's meeting needs, you know, during this unprecedented time. So no, we don't have a particular guidance on that, but we really are encouraging each system to be in touch with us on, in terms of, you know, if it's going to result in a something that looks very different from their staffing plan.
Okay. So I have two questions. One is related to THM testing, whether it's going to be pushed out further with another date or stay on schedule. I think you addressed that earlier, saying that you're still kind of looking at some of the sample schedules, and the person should probably be in touch with their region to discuss that.
That's right. That's right.
The other is a question about whether or not the system will be able to perform their biannual flushing program. Would there be anything preventing them from doing so in DEP's view?
No, you know, again, I will defer to the drinking water program. I don't think there's anything that prevents a system from doing it. I'm not aware that there's anything that we're doing that says they can't do it if they're planning to do it.
All right. Next one. So will anyone from DEP be at the regional offices to accept reports if a water system wants to hand deliver them?
At this time, the offices are closed. So I would say that if they, you know, again, if we can make progress on the electronic materials, we can do that. If people want to mail them in, we are making arrangements to get, you know, hard copy reports by mail. And we have a protocol for going in periodically to pick up mail and packages that we're getting, because we're still, you know, in a lot of ways, largely a paper agency. But, I would say that if, you know, rather than hand deliver, I'd encourage putting it in the mail instead.
Okay, so here's a question from a Cape Cod supplier. They're currently considering seasonal water service turn-on requests as non-essential, as the homes are not occupied and people are encouraged not to travel. We will turn on the water if the property is occupied, but want to keep staff out of homes whenever possible for the protection of staff and homeowners. Do we think there are any issues with this?
That's interesting. You know, again, I think it's good that people are, you know, thinking ahead and being prudent on that. I might ask, I don't know if, you know, Dave Johnston or Rick Rondeau are on this call. If so, could you press *6 and unmute yourselves and, you know, see, you know, you're probably dealing with some of this right now on the Cape, and I'd be interested in whether you've had to deal with this elsewhere.
Hey, Marty, this is Damon. While they're unmuting, I could give you some perspective. I'm from the state of Maine. This morning, they raised the same question, and the issue was a little bit different, where seasonal homeowners were being told that they might be denied water service at those homes, and the state of Maine determined that would be illegal. So if they're asking for water to be turned on, you have to provide it, at least in Maine. I know this is a slightly different question, and I think my take on it initially is that if it's unoccupied and the owners aren't asking for water, I wouldn't have a problem keeping it turned off.
Right, but the question, you know, I also thought the question that Jen was raising was if they do have to turn it on, you know, they're saying they're going to turn it on, but they're not going to go into the house to perform any you know, additional function.
Yeah, I would assume you can turn on from exterior, but I'm not familiar with all the permutations.
But to your point, Damon, it seems like if the homeowner is asking for service to be turned on, then at least in the state of Maine, they are saying that the water system does have to do that.
Yeah, that was what the Maine director told us this morning.
Okay.
Yeah, and I don't know how different, you know, Massachusetts is. We can, I don't know. Do we have anybody from Southeast that's been able to unmute themselves?
Yeah, Marty, Dave Johnson here. I am unmuted, and I don't think I can cover it any better than Damon did. I would have to wonder, though, if there's such a dramatic need to have their system turned on, whether or not, you know, there's the ability to get inside the home. It seems that I don't understand what is compelling these folks from wanting it if no one is there. So that would be my question.
I think the issue is that, and I heard this from another CAPE person yesterday, that a lot of people who have second homes are saying that they are going to go down to their second homes while this, you know, non-essential work thing is happening, you know, that they're going to utilize these second homes when they otherwise wouldn't. So I guess that's a question of whether or not it's, you know, essential for the water system to respond and provide the water on a second home.
Yeah,
well, I think the answer to that was yes, that, you know, we don't have the ability to deny someone water. I think the rest of the question is there an obligation for the water supplier to then go inside the home to test the water when we know that the water suppliers had ongoing programs to test the water and distribution? So, you know, the concern would be there from, you know, what are we looking at from stagnated water from the point where the homeowner has a service connection to their delivery system, their faucets? So, you know, that I frankly don't know that making that determination is the obligation of the water supplier. The obligation of the water supplier is to provide safe water to the home, in distribution. So it may be that, and I would defer to Damon for better guidance, but my reaction would be that this could be managed through guidance from the water supplier relative to what the homeowner ought to be doing prior to occupation to flush the entire system within the home.
It appears also that sometimes they pull the meter when they close down the service in the winter. So it could be an issue of going into the home to install the meter. But maybe we can just leave that one for a discussion between Southeast Region and the CAPE suppliers.
Right.
Absolutely. They can feel free to contact me either at david.johnston@mass.gov.
Commissioner, here's another one in terms of essential. And so, you know, the directive was clear on our operations staff being essential. I've got a couple questions yesterday, and here's one today about whether or not the governor's mandate considers administrative and financial staff essential to the operations of a water system.
That's a good one. I know in a couple of places it does actually talk, like, you know, in the healthcare setting, it actually does talk about those functions being essential. I'm going to try to pull up the order while we look at it, and, you know, Appendix A while we look at it to see if I can go back to those sections.
In the electric utility, there was a mention of call center staff. So I think my read on that was if you need, you know, some people to be available to answer phones and direct your operational staff, then that might be considered essential.
Right. And you know, the language for DPWs, you know, was very, very broad, all parts, you know, about the operation, helping to maintain the facilities and operations. So I would say that it was, you know, it was pretty broad language. And my computer, is frozen up right this second, but I'm still trying to get to it. And I can, I can answer that one offline if you like, and you, you know, you can share that with people. Mm-hmm. But you know, there's, hey, Marty, you know, I yep.
This is Damon. I have the waste and wastewater. It's actually, it says waste and wastewater. It's going to be water and wastewater on the governor's website. It does include, you know, staff that support the SCADA systems and maintaining digital systems infrastructure. So, I mean, I think it goes at least beyond the operators, you know, to make sure that the system is able to keep running.
Mm-hmm. We'll take a look at it again. I apologize. You know, that section I do remember, but like I say, it's in a couple of places. And so I'll try to give you as complete an answer as I can on that, Jen.
And also, I just encourage folks who are members of Mass Waterworks who have questions about what other water systems are doing. We do have a community bulletin board where you can sort of post questions like that, and others can share information about how they're handling that situation. So that's available to members just by logging in and accessing the community bulletin board. I'm getting some people here who want to share what they're doing, but I don't think we'll take the time to do that right now. Mm-hmm. Question for Damon. I guess this goes to the reporting question. Most labs use EDP to submit water quality reports. Is this no longer available?
Nope. We are live and pulling those reports off on a daily basis.
Okay. How does DEP feel if an operator working in the plant gets sick? What do we need to do with the plant and keeping it online after an operator gets sick?
Well, you know, again, I think this is going to be a discussion that doesn't just involve us. I think you're going to need to be talking to, you know, the public health experts as well, you know, in terms of all the requirements, you know, and all the guidance that we've gotten about somebody, you know, first of all, you know, what, you know, the requirements to let people know. That raises a question about, you know, cleaning the work area that I think, you know, a system would have to think about, you know, precautions for other staff. So I think it's a question not just for DEP. I think, you know, you're going to, you know, if you're encountering a situation like that, I think you're going to be talking to the public health authorities to make sure that, you know, you have the best advice about, you know, disinfecting the, you know, the affected area, if that's a concern, and also, you know, what you need to do in terms of protecting the other people in the workplace.
There have been a couple of questions about the DEP drinking water program contact list. So I just want to read, you know, Damon said that anyone who wants additional email addresses added to the programdirector.dwp@mass.gov. So just send an email to program.director-dwp@mass.gov. And they'll add extras to the interested parties group. Okay, in regards to staffing disagreements in municipalities, if the town officials don't agree with what the water system is doing, does the water system refer the issue to the DEP regional office?
Can you give me an example of what something like that might be? You may be reading a question.
So I think this two questions sort of relate. There was the question about, you know, suggestions made to stagger the workforce, but the town manager and didn't agree with that because of possible union issues. So if there are disagreements politically within the municipality between the commissioner, the water commissioners, and or the town manager, does DEP regional staff, can they play a role in mediating that?
Well, you know, again, hopefully we can, you know, we can work through these issues. You know, DEP's role, you know, first and foremost as a regulator is to make sure that the system is being operated, you know, consistent with the requirements of, you know, state and federal requirements. What we're, you know, what is being overlaid here is, you know, the recognition that in an emergency situation, you're going to need to, you know, think about how you're planning for manpower and operations while it's ongoing. You know, I don't know that we will be able to resolve all of your disputes, between different parts, but we can certainly tell you whether or not, you know, we have, you know, we're seeing the world the same way in terms of compliance with, you know, state and federal drinking water requirements. So I'm not entirely sure, we can act as a final authority on the best way, but we can certainly tell you whether what we're seeing is consistent with what we would regard as safe operation. And so if you're trying to, you know, get that sense from DEP, we can provide that.
Here's a crystal ball question. So they've scaled down staffing, working on week-by-week shifts. We'll be doing this up to April 7th. Is there any talk of this lasting longer? And if so, should we be planning for it?
Yeah, I think it's hard to answer that one right now. I think, you know, we're in the same situation you're in. We're very much going to be following the lead of what the public health professionals are telling us. There's obviously the seventh date. There's going to have to be before that some reassessment. But you know, my powers to, you know, say what's going to happen in the next couple of weeks. I think we're going to need to see. We're all going to need to learn together on this. And so I don't have any additional insight beyond what you might have.
All right, I think that exhausts the questions that I have received. There is one, and just to highlight, you are holding a similar call with the wastewater operators tomorrow. So I will be sending that out to our membership after this call so that you have that if you want to participate in the wastewater call tomorrow.
That's right, and thanks for doing that, and that's a good reminder. That's right, we wanted to do the same kind of opportunity to, you know, exchange views, you know, questions and answers. We will be joined by staff from EPA. As you know, we're not a fully delegated state here, so we'll have Denny Dart and others from the wastewater program at US EPA also on the line in case some of the questions go to how EPA sees the world.
Okay, I do have someone who has a question, so he'll submit it through the chat. I can read it. And then I guess after we get that question, we'll say that if you haven't been able to submit a question through email or on the chat, you can unmute yourself. Hopefully it won't be too unmanageable, but you can unmute yourself and ask your question using star 6.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yep, go ahead, Andrew.
Okay, thank you very much. I just wanted to, this may be a silly question, but I wanted to know, is there any risk to the water supply itself of someone going into like a pump house if they have the virus, that it infects the system?
You cut out on one part. So you're saying, is there any risk to the water system if somebody does what?
If they're sick and they go into like we have a pump house.
Mm-hmm.
Can they transfer it from themselves into the water system? Is that your question?
Yes.
We don't have a lot of data to suggest that is a concern, but again, that's based on what we know right now. And on our Q&A that we're going to be putting out, we're going to be providing you with information about what EPA and the CDC say about, you know, what we know about COVID in the water. And so far, you know, EPA's, there's not a lot there to suggest that, you know, it's, that's, you know, been a big concern that's identified. But on the other hand, you know, we're, you know, I'll let the material speak for itself. I don't know if, I don't think we have anybody from our Office of Research and Standards on the line, but Damon, is there anything else you wanted to add on that?
All I would add is that the biggest risk is that you might infect other workers if a sick worker went into that facility. What you'll see on the CDC webpage is that if you disinfect your public water system, they know that will kill the virus in the water supply itself. But I know a lot of our systems don't disinfect, so we don't have a lot of good answers on that kind of situation.
Thank you.
All right. Anyone else have a question that hasn't been answered? All right. So, Commissioner Suberg, when the Q&A is posted, you'll send out the link to the updated Q&A?
Yes.
All right, great.
Yes, we will. And again, you know, our plan will be to do this again next week. You know, we're going to continue to try to update the Q's and A's. These questions, some of them are pretty challenging, and some of them are new for us. So we appreciate being able to get them so we can work on them with you in real time. And again, we'll try to put all of our, you know, collected discussions up on the online. So hopefully it's a help to everybody. And once again, I really want to say, you know, thank you to all of you for the, you know, the amazing work you're doing in this unprecedented time. And we look forward to continuing to work with you. And thank you, Jen, for arranging this and getting us to a place where we could have, you know, this number of people together on a phone call. So thank you for that.
Yeah, and we did, just so you know, had about 250 participants today. So I'm really pleased that you could all be here, and we'll send out information about next week's call.
Thanks again.
And this was recorded, so we will get that recording out to those folks who were unable. I hope our technological challenges have been overcome, and so we can get that posting out quicker.
Great. Thank you all.
Thanks.